Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. Very excited to be joined by one of my great colleagues in the water sector, Tom Ferguson. He is the Vice President of Programming for Imagine H2O, and he runs their Innovation Accelerator. Tom, how is it going?
Very well, very well. Always nice to be in the presence of greatness.
It's a two-way street, Tom. It's a two-way street. I think that's why we're excited.
Right.
Yeah, we're excited to have this conversation here. One of the things that Imagine H2O does and the Water Environment Federation partners with you on is the Innovation Summit each year. And it's coming up soon. That's why we're having this chat. Can you give folks the details about the summit for this year?
You know, we love WEF, and we've been working with WEF for a long time on the Innovation Pavilion that happens annually at WEF Tech. And 3 years ago, we decided that it would be quite fun to use our geographic location in San Francisco, as well as the work we do with early stage companies, to pull together a bunch of folks that were interested in innovation. And so we put together our first Water Innovation Summit, and it was great, and it was a really good start. We certainly learned a lot. And what we've done over the last couple of years is just really kind of refocus the overall event to do a few things. I think we're just trying to be almost as risky as we can be. Last year, we were focusing on deployment, but we held it at, you know, we held it at Google.org. We had a range of students in the room. We had speakers that usually, well, we had George Hawkins, which most people have heard of, but we also had speakers that really don't get, I think, enough airtime, that have done enormously impressive things kind of within the water sector. And so the summit is about bringing together a diverse collection of professionals, obviously from inside the sector, but we're also really trying to have representation from outside the sector in our speaking group.
And that's one of the things I think is really cool about it is people go to a lot of water conferences and events and meetings, and you kind of hear a lot of the same people sometimes, and you hear the perspective right from inside the sector, but it really helps you think a little bit differently when you hear from experts in other areas.
Exactly. I think it increases the potential for the collision points between what you think is true about the world and what someone else thinks is true about the world. And that's really where kind of creativity, insight, and, you know, progress kind of comes from. I always think about the idea of Lin-Manuel Miranda going on holiday, sitting on a beach, pulling out what can only be described as a relatively dry tome by Ron Chernow about a guy called Alexander Hamilton, who's obviously much more relevant to your, well, you probably learned about him in childhood. I know I didn't, being from the UK. But when you overlap a guy with, you know, that level of talent, musical theater, with the innate drama of the story out of this, whatever, 800-page tome, what comes out of it is Hamilton. Everyone else read that and was like, huh, history. He read that and thought, how has this not been turned into a musical yet? And we're trying to, you know, create the Hamilton of the water sector many times over by bringing in as diverse a range of, you know, opinions and insights as we possibly can. We're focusing on the water stuff, but we want to make sure that other people are represented as well.
Well, hopefully by having this podcast about the Innovation Summit, we can make, you know, the tickets be as hot as they are for Hamilton, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The resale market is going to be absolutely outrageous.
Yeah. These are going to be on StubHub for sure. I interrupted our original train of thought here.
We asked ourselves after we did deployment last year, like where do we feel kind of most uncomfortable? And where do we think that there is the highest urgency, and where do we think is kind of most underrepresented relative to that urgency in most of the conversations that kind of we have in the water sector? And we looked at a few things, but we chose something that is probably a little bit unexpected for, you know, an organization that's like ours, that's most, you know, most well known for our accelerator work. So our work with innovators and technologies to bring them out into the market, you know, looking at the next generation, because usually there's a panel about this, and there are some really interesting things that are happening within WEF. Was a really great example of them. Our keynote speaker, Ifatayo Venner, has been kind of instrumental with that sitting on the board. But we wanted to actually really give it some proper airtime and dig into not only the issues we're facing, but like, what can we actually do about it? What can we learn from people outside the sector? What is the actual voice of the next generation? And how do we make sure that we have both senior leadership and people who are kind of earmarked for senior leadership in the room so they can, well, hopefully get into it because we like controversy, but more likely, you know, just really, really pull apart some of the thorny issues and hopefully move people's opinions on the issue, you know, further down the road than they would be able to without the summit, accelerating their thought process. Well, as it were.
I think it's a very wise and appropriate and timely choice by you guys to focus on the next generation. Could you just build out for a minute what you mean by that? What do you mean when you say the next generation? What is that referring to?
So the idea originally was to say we're going to have water utility leaders, and then we're going to ask them to earmark somebody under the age of 30 that they think has shown particular kind of leadership promise. But then we thought, Why is it our interpretation of the next generation that it needs to be, that is the one that needs to be represented? So we loosened the idea of next generation, but the core idea was we want to have a room full of utility leaders and then people from within their organization. So one and one, one leader, one person who's been earmarked for kind of the next generation, next generation of water leader. And so you've got both sides of the coin represented. And hopefully, you know, we're going to create a space where people will be, you know, as honest and insightful as they possibly can. But we've looked at it from all sides. So we've invited, you know, various water leaders that have been through WEF programs. We're going to have a team from MIT, Berkeley, Stanford. We're opening it up to, you know, as many and diverse a range of people as we possibly can. Because the next generation is less about age and it's more about viewpoint.
I love that whole that point. It's very easy to think of it in the traditional simplistic way of age, but there are there's a wide variety of what we're talking about here with the next era of the water workforce, other than just age. So continue.
No question. And so we're trying to. This whole day is about thinking around it. So we wanted to make sure that we were thinking around the issue from the off. And so we've got real kind of thought leaders, but also relevant to you, kind of communication leaders, people like Kathy Bailey, who heads up Greater Cincinnati, Carla Reed at WSSC, who was on the WEF Talks a couple of years ago, absolutely smoked it as far as I was concerned. Ifatayo Venner as well from Arcadis. And then people like Adam Tank, who's director of Smart Cities at Suez, one of our alumni, Emily Hicks, who's a president at FredSense. You know, it's the innovator perspective as well, because I think you can tell a lot about organizations by trying to sell things to them. And so we'll have all of the companies of the 2019 Accelerator represented. They come from there's 13 companies from 5 countries, range of genders, backgrounds, and obviously, target markets. But what it comes down to is, like, what are the ideas that we really need to be highlighting in terms of the people element of looking after, you know, society's fundamental resource, to make sure that, like, the truism is that what got us here isn't going to get us there. So how do we highlight the ideas that we think are going to be able to accelerate this inflection point, kind of, you know, bring it further forward, make sure that more people are taking on the best of what's out there, and making sure that we've got a really strong next leadership group coming through. There's no question that that is the case. Is our aspects of this problem quite worrying? Is the silver tsunami real? For sure, right? But are there some, you know, top-notch professionals who are ready to take on the reins of leadership out there? You know, of course they are. So yeah, really, that's really what we want to highlight.
Yeah, and I was really interested to look at kind of the big topic buckets that you have for the day, and I'd like to take a couple minutes and talk about each of these and get your thoughts on them and why they're important and just kind of what's happening in that space, or maybe what you hope to hear about at the summit. So let's talk about this one: attracting, hiring, and retaining talent. Cultivating future leaders. Obviously, that is huge with the silver tsunami as you mentioned. But what are your thoughts on there? And I think, most importantly, innovation, right? You can't just put jobs up on a job site anymore and hope people fill it. This is an area for innovation, and that's the whole point of your summit.
Again, when people think about us, they think technology, accelerators, maybe a bit of Silicon Valley, hopefully kind of increasingly global, but very much focused on like, what's the next thing that's coming out that can physically like transform either my balance sheet or the complexity of my operations, you know, get rid of a problem that I have through a kind of a technical focus. We think about innovation, and you know, I sort of mentioned this previously, but I think it's worth reiterating, is that it is innovation is about a mindset that doesn't accept the status quo as what has to be. You know, that's as true about how do I rethink my anaerobic digestion system as it is for how do I think about attracting the best and brightest into my utility. But the fundamental point, right, is that none of this happens without people. Like the technical solutions that we are going to need to solve our most pressing water resource management challenges, you know, come down to people. There was this great quote. I can't remember exactly who it was from, but, you know, at the bottom of every problem is a person. And so really thinking about the people within organizations and starting to get a little bit more scientific and recognizing that it really is fundamental. The HR isn't just this nice thing that happens to the side of the core of the operations. It is core to the operations. And the better you get at it, the better your life is going to be. And so we wanted to think about the life cycle. So firstly, you know, if you think about it as selling a product to a talented person, how do you represent that product? How do you represent that job? How do you represent the organization? How do you communicate with them, you know, when you're first getting in touch with them? And that's as true for kind of later stage professionals that may be coming in from engineering consultancies as it is for high school grads. Because there's all sorts of value propositions you can provide to them. You know, the water sector is like on average in the, you know, 10th and 25th percentile is about 25 to 50% better paid, you know, than the average. That's just one example, right? So that's the attracting part of it. And then the hiring. What is the process you go through to make sure you're getting the people that you want? Again, one of the great insights that I saw the other day, and I'm sorry I keep on throwing things out without being able to credit them, it's outrageous, is that 80% of the job is wanting to do the job. How do you hire for that? How do you make sure that it's, how are you doing things that are imaginative to make sure that it's not just what's your resume and what's your background and tell us things you like and tell us things you don't like? You know, is this a person that is just going to come in, work hard, figure it out? Because I happen to think that most jobs are just moving things from A to B. Yes, you need to have there are elements where you need to have a good technical background. I'm sure all the scientists listening are now kind of hurling their smartphones at very hard surfaces. What are you talking about, you hideous MBA grad? And so it's, you know, it's about making sure people are opening their eyes to the best processes that are out there. So Salesforce and IDEO are going to be talking about their hiring processes. You know, they access the best talent in the world for their companies. How do they do it? And then retention is a really big one. And there are various ways in which you can do it. You know, why do people work there? People get used to pay in places. People get used to paychecks really fast. It's amazing how many miserable people I know who are working who would just crazy paychecks coming into their account. And they're just like, oh, I don't know whether I'm going to stick with this.
Wow.
You know, once you come through, once you get past like what you're being paid, the reason people stick around is everything but the money. Hmm. It's meaning. It's fun. It's the people they work with. It's growth. It's challenges. It's, you know, it's passing the get out of bed test, which water always does, but also making sure that, you know, it passes the beer test. Is this something that you're proud of? When you're having a beer with someone and say, I work in the water sector, do you get that warm feeling in the pit of your stomach that says, I'm genuinely proud to do it? That's retention. That's why people stick around.
I think that's a strength that the water sector, or something the water sector has going for it, is it can be a tremendous source of pride, right? That people that you're working and helping provide clean water for your community. Most water people I meet are very passionate about what they do, and so I think that is something the water sector can definitely capitalize on, right?
Oh my God! I mean, it's a totally unfair advantage, and that's why we need people, more people like. No, you and the ladies at Rogue Water, and obviously, you know, George and all the rest of these emerging voices, Kathy Bailey, to be able to tell this story wider and further. Because once you're in the belly of the beast, so I graduated with 900 people. They all went off to kind of a variety of different places. Three of us directly went into water. In fact, I didn't directly go into water. So actually only two people went directly into water. One is the Blackstones group, and then Peter Brooks, who now runs Water Talent. And then two of us fell into it through Danaher and me coming to run the accelerator at Imagine H2O. But this is like, I always judge the strength of an industry by how few MBAs go into it. Because it's, you know, it's the right level of unsexy. You know that there are going to be some great opportunities in there. And what I've learned over the last 4 years is this, we are surrounded by the most enthusiastic, dedicated, humble, brilliant group of professionals that, you know, really, they allow, you know, it doesn't get any more basic than this. They allow society to function and no one thanks them for it. I mean, that's what we think about a lot in terms of the talent life cycle. That's what we're going to be trying to pull out of it.
Okay. I like this next area that you're focusing on. That's building a culture of innovation and ensuring continuity. And I think this gets to what you said about what got us here isn't going to get us there, right? Mm-hmm. The water sector is in the midst of a historic paradigm shift where we're moving from the old way of just treating water and getting rid of it to resource recovery and harnessing data and so forth and so on. And so I think the culture in the water workplace has to reflect that paradigm shift and reflect that we've got to take risks. We got to do things differently to solve the challenges we have, to seize the advantage of technology and innovation, et cetera, et cetera. So could you talk about that?
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I think culture is a really interesting one. You know, it starts with the word itself, right? It's really hard to pin down exactly what that means. Like, how does that manifest itself? There's quite a good definition I saw the other day, which I'd be, you know, happy to share in the show notes or email to you. I'm not going to do it disservice, but really what it boils down to is, what do people do when no one's watching? And one of the things that I think is really important about, you know, an innovation culture is a constantly looking at everything you're doing and asking yourself, how can you get 50% better at it? Like, does that mean like a fundamental reappraisal of the technical approach to this particular problem? Does it mean like going out and prospecting at kind of, you know, Imagine H2O or MIT or like wherever it is to look for the next generation of innovator? Or is it actually being like, why are we filing all of these forms by hand? And why is this still done in an Excel spreadsheet? What would happen if we engaged like a cheap, you know, designer or software programmer to just try something? One of the best, and then actually making sure that is translated into action. So last year, the absolutely excellent Cliff Chan at EB Mud gave us this example on our opening panel of what he does with his group, is that he gives them, I can't remember whether it was $7,500 or $17,500, as essentially their individual slush fund.
Wow.
To say, I trust you. Like, we're not going to allow you to do anything that, you know, can poison anyone. But this is for you to look at the universe of problems that you run into in your everyday life and lean test a solution without getting my approval and coming back and telling me the results. If it falls on its face, that is fine. Just tell me what you learned and I'll give you the money again next time, right? And this has gone on an annual basis and you can do multiple projects in the same thing. But what Clifford is telling his group is that not only do I trust you, but I also am requiring you to think critically about the job that you are doing, which is a very, very simple and very easy. I mean, you know, Clifford doesn't have to vet this stuff. You know, he doesn't have to go through proposals and planning documents and all this crap. You know, he's saying, you know, simple fixes. It's going to be interesting to see what you identify. We can think critically about what you do and you'll get 50% of doing it next time. And it is amazing what has come out.
I mean, a big part of innovating is failing, right? Like you have to, you need to fail to find success or to figure out the solution. How many times do you figure out something the first try, right?
Exactly.
And so we have to foster this culture of risk, responsible risk, as you said, to get forward. Interesting.
I mean, it's, you know, it's tough. At the utility level, I you know, I don't want to be sort of pretending it's all sunlight and rainbows, because a lot of people are looking at their you know, income statements and balance sheets and you know, really thinking about the financial the ongoing financial health of the organizations and say, you know, I can't ring fence that amount of money for a bunch of people without any kind of authorization to go and try stuff. Like, I get that. But then what I would say to those people is that, like, ask yourself why you're having to ask that question. Like, why is it? What's at the root of you not having the bandwidth to commit, you know, those small-ish amounts of money? You know, obviously, you know, is usually we don't have enough customers. But is actually the root of your problem is that you don't communicate well enough with the customers that you have to get them to see you as an entity that is deserving of their money? Do you still call them connections? You know, I even have a problem with the word ratepayer.
That's just very kind of distancing. It's cold. It's sterile. Yeah. It's transactional, you know?
Yeah, it's better than connection. It's better than connection, which doesn't have any kind of, you know, thoughts or feelings or opinions. And also you can't change it because it's just a fixed entity. But a ratepayer doesn't help. A customer is something that you can convince them of. And so, you know, if you don't have the money to be doing this kind of stuff, when actually the ROI, I mean, Clifford could, you know, talk to you until the cows come home about the ROI on a lot of the programs that he's done with this. This is actually a great way of saving an outsized amount of money, a great way of investing, not only in your team, but in money saving kind of opportunities. If you don't feel like you have the bandwidth, you know, being innovative is just asking yourself, why not? Mm. And what are the small steps that I can do that are costless to me? It may well be just getting good at Twitter. Like, that's pretty innovative for a water utility at the moment. And so that's the kind of the innovation part of it. It's as simple as a mindset change. And I don't, you know, I don't like it when people say it's all about, you know, innovation and making sure that we get zero liquid discharge and fundamentally overhauling the way in which we deal with our AD plants, or what are we doing with, you know, higher strength wastewater and all the rest of it. Yes, that needs to be done. But at its heart is a decision to look at the world through a different prism.
I like that a lot, and I think I maybe saw this in an email from you about the idea that when innovation, we're not just talking about technology here, right? We're talking about across an organization in everything you do and how you attract and hire and retain people and what your internal culture is, and it goes on and on and on, and how you manage. And I think that having a culture of innovation is going to be an essential part of attracting, hiring, retaining talent, right? People want to be in a situation like that where things are...
For sure.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love about my job, I mean, I really do not think what I do is rocket science, like, at all. But one of the things that we have got right is that in everything we do, I mean, I wish we had a higher cadence so we could do it more often. You know, we're doing 2 accelerators a year now, so we can do it slightly more often. What's important is this idea of where are the places that we can get 20% better? Because if you're doing that on a monthly basis, it's amazing what happens to the curve of how good you are if you're improving by 10% each month. You know, compounding is one of the great laws of nature that is as overlooked in the professional world as it is usually in people's savings habit. You know, it's time plus percentages that build on itself it means a serious outcome. And it's interesting how you apply that to continuity. One of the reason why the silver tsunami obviously is so scary is because we're not set up to make sure that the skills and expertise doesn't walk out the door with the people who are retiring. Essentially, in terms of the retention of information and expertise, you know, there are all sorts of approaches from, you know, checklists to augmented reality, right, that can really help anybody coming into a situation get up to speed very, very quickly with what needs to be done. It doesn't necessarily need to be, here's your 6-page handbook. The 6-page handbooks are probably still going to be around sort of forever. but in terms of making sure that your company has resilience, there's a huge innovation component to how that can be achieved. And there are some really interesting examples of founders and companies out there, like Operational Precision Systems and others, AR Utility, that are doing fantastic things that can say, hey, this looks a little bit more like a role that we can plug someone into and they can get up to speed really, really fast, and we don't have to worry too much You know, we need Greg to stick around as long as he can to make sure that, you know, people are onboarded properly, obviously. But Greg can go and, you know, enjoy his retirement without thinking that he's kind of pulled the plug on the water utility system that he's worked for 40 years.
The last topic area that you all are focusing on at the summit is the technology opportunity. And the idea of allocating dollars for deployment. So yeah, we are getting into the innovation here a little bit, but also not innovation in the strict technology sense, but invest the innovation in how you invest and budget and so forth. So could you talk about this one?
So looking at it through the eyes of the water utility, you know, we've talked a lot here about just mindset shift, which is usually treated as the really hard, really easy bit. And actually, that's the really hard, really hard bit. It's quite easy to put out a purchase order for an innovation and, you know, getting your engineering team to work with them and getting the pilot done. You know, it takes a long time, but it's a process that's known, right? You're not asking people to change their behavior, which is the best thing. So, you know, in terms of the technology opportunity around the next generation, it comes back to this idea of, you know, why are a next generation of leader going to get involved and what are they going to want to do, right? They want to make these roles and these organizations their own. They want to push them onto the next level. And usually there's a massive technological element to that. So, you know, what are the reasons why we haven't been able to, you know, do more with less to the extent that we have to because of our kind of conflating budgets? Why does it take us so much time and money to be able to replace a mile of pipe? Like, what are the things that we can do and do better that are going to push this utility to the next level? You know, in my opinion, you know, in too many utilities, those questions kind of aren't being asked enough. But there are more than enough examples of people who really do take it seriously. And so what we want to highlight to people is a couple of things. Firstly, you know, we have an amazing array of founders in our 2019 accelerator. They're going to be pitching. You know, it's a 2-minute elevator pitch and then speed 8-minute kind of a mini roundtable, stand-up roundtables where people can go and talk to them to learn a bit more in depth about the technology. But what we really want people to do is go a little bit more in depth about how these people think about problems. So these innovators, what they have done, and this is true obviously of all entrepreneurs, is that they've looked at a problem and they thought, I could fix that. Or they've looked at the problem and thought, oh, that sucks enough that people are going to pay to have that fixed for them. And then they've gone out and done it. And I think being exposed to that mindset it's been completely eye-opening for me. I mean, I love what I do, you know, in large part because I get to spend, you know, time around all of these individuals who are wrestling down in the mud in the kind of knife fight in a phone box. That is bringing a new idea to life. But I don't see a huge difference between the entrepreneur that's doing something like, you know, building an organization up from scratch and the intrapreneur that's trying to get an idea off the ground within a utility. And so what we're trying to highlight is that, yes, there's a technology opportunity. What we want you to see is the mindset behind somebody who's bringing something like this to life. That to us is the route into this kind of, you know, next generation idea. But then the other side of it, you know, you see, you know, the people who build these companies, you know, often are the people who go into, you know, water leadership roles. You know, David Stanton, you know, serial founder within the water entrepreneurial technology community, and is now, you know, president of Suez. You know, often these people are the people that are going to be the, you know, the next generation of leaders within water. We usually hear at the various conferences from people within with the water utilities. But what we're trying to point out is that, like, there are really smart people just lying around all over the place that can really, like, you know, up your game. And the last thing I'll say about this is that the innovators who are selling to utilities can tell you a lot about your process. They can tell you a lot about your people. They can tell you a lot about what it's like to interface on a granular level with your utility. You should be asking your customers that, but when you really kind of get down and dirty in terms of getting a purchase order done and a project implemented, you can learn a lot from the technologists that you're working with, and we want to encourage people to do that. So it's a bit of a nuanced take on the technology opportunity, but that's how we see it.
I love what you said about the idea that you can have these entrepreneurs and this entrepreneurial mindset within a utility and in advancing certain technologies and so forth. I love that image and that concept. Imagine H2O Water Environment Federation. We encourage people to sign up, register, attend the summit for sure. If people can't make it, or if, you know, tickets end up being like Hamilton and being through the roof on StubHub, what are some ways you think people can kind of follow these issues, follow these ideas, find resources and experts?
Everyone should always feel free to get in touch with us. We're always looking to work with, you know, any WEF member. You know, we have a specific program for it. It's called our Beta Partners Program. These are just the organizations that commit to being a warm introduction for technology and innovators. You know, sometimes that's about like know your market for innovators, but more often than not, it's about I have a problem and I really need to find someone that can solve it for me yesterday. And, you know, we had 255 applications from 46 countries last year. We've got a pretty deep bench of tech that we know that that is out there. So, you know, my door's always open, tom@imagineh2o.org. Please do get in touch. March 21st at 9 a.m. Hopefully, you know, as many people can be there as possible. We are over 50% sold as well. We only have 140 spaces because our lovely venue is very nice. But it is limited in terms of size. We also think that, you know, smaller gatherings tend to work better in terms of the exchange of ideas. So we want to kind of keep it that way. We're pressing various excellent people into service in terms of what's going on outside, including you.
Yeah.
Travis, the one and only Travis Loop is going to be there's going to be some live streaming. There's going to be some snippets from the speakers being recorded on the day. We're going to be doing various outputs. In terms of our blog, please do, you know, it's www.imagineh2o.org/medium. Just go to it at our website. We're going to be putting out a variety of content ahead of it. Just really about, you know, going around this issue. And then obviously we're going to do our debrief afterwards. So there's going to be a variety of content. And I know that we are going to be active on Twitter. And I know that Kathy Bailey is, and I know that Carla Reed is, and I know the H2 Duo are, and I know that you, Travis, are. One of the things that I've really liked over the last year is that there is an emerging water Twitter.
Yeah.
People, you know, there are various tribes within the Twitter crew, but it's really been really fun to see the buildup of people who are taking kind of personal and organizational communications into their own hand. You know, we're getting better at it. We've been plugging away for a while, but obviously, shout out to Northeastern Ohio for just being like properly funny.
Oh, I agree. There's some genius behind that Twitter account.
There is some genius behind that Twitter account, and it stands up with any of them. But it's this fundamental thing that, you know, communications is really important. And I guarantee you that when Northeastern Ohio go to anybody within their catchment area and ask them for a favor, no problem. You know, whether that's a price hike or you know, they need to disrupt you know, whatever. Travel down Main Street for 3 days. People are like, okay, no, we get you. You're an organization that are in our lives. Yeah, that's fine. Whereas otherwise they might be, you know, throwing their toys out of the pram. But well, that's how people can do it if they can't join us. But yeah, March 21st at 9 a.m. in San Francisco. We hope as many of your members can come as possible.
Awesome. Tom, I mean, we could keep talking on and go on a million tangents with this conversation, but I guess we'll wrap it up at this point. Really appreciate the time and the information, and look forward to staying in touch.
Thanks, Travis. Always a pleasure to speak to you, and thanks so much for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
Words on Water.